You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
7 minutes after 10. As promised, we're going to be hanging out on the wireless with one of Africa's most brilliant and most generous and most well-loved writers. Zuki Savanra is with us for the next 53 minutes or so. And it's been a long time coming. I thought that you were banning us or something. Eh? I've had to persuade you. And eventually she said, yes, I'm now ready. The next time I'm in Jersey, we will make it happen. Zuki Savanra, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me and for that generous and amazing welcome. Also, you were really always asking me for quizzes, and I'm.
But the funny thing about the quizzes is that you are a writer's writer. Your generosity. I know that writers who are listening to this conversation will agree with me. I can't think of another writer in our circle of friends, in our community of writers, who are as generous as you. So I don't know what you are scared of, because you would be winning that quiz like no man's business.
I have heard some of those questions, yeah? I was like, what are you talking about? Who is that? And then I Googled and I got it right. And then I said, oh yeah, I got so many questions right.
And then being suspicious about some of my winners and calling their ethics into question. Now, if you have never heard of Zuki Savanra, you haven't lived. Shame on you, because she is incredibly prolific. She writes in all genres, from small column-sized writings for the Mail and Guardians to longer essay pieces, fiction, non-fiction, short stories. She really is incredibly, incredibly prolific, and that's quite apart from 8 books, most of them individually authored books, The Madams in 2006, and of course right up to the most recent one in 2014, London, Cape Town, Joburg. So I'm going to open the lines throughout. If you are one of her fans, and I know that many of you are, give us a call and you can ask Zuki Savanra whatever question you want. She is an extrovert. She loves conversation. And we will talk about her literary output, her literary journey so far, and everything else about the literary landscape. 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg, and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Zuki Savanra, you know you and I have often talked about literary festivals and how they're often not about literature. So with your permission, before we are in conversation with you, I actually want to start with your books.
Okay.
And I want to start with a small little reading done by Renata Stierman, who is just one of my favorite South African actresses. And it's so uncanny, because this also connects to a conversation that we've just had on the open line. So here is Renata Stierman, who is just absolutely brilliant in doing a short reading from Zuki Savanra's latest work.
The F Word by Zuki Savanra. Bow Wow, Omarion, and Lil Romeo were the young musicians who seemed to be on television, whether on MTV or on the children's shows on ETV or SABC. If Martin and I had Whitney, Madonna, and Pet Shop Boys, these three young Americans were the most influential musicians for Zuko. And this being the case, Zuko too wanted his hair braided like the celebrities. I asked Gladness to do it, and she did neat little cornrows that had him looking like one of his musical heroes. It didn't turn out well when Martin got back home. "What's happening with your hair?" he asked as soon as he got into the house and saw Zuko. "No. Hey, little man. How's your day? Swimming, etc. None of that. Just, what's happening with your hair?" in a voice full of displeasure. "Aunt Gladness braided it. Mom said I look like Bow Wow. Do you think it's nice, Dad?" Zuko asked, pretending innocence. Yet I'm pretty certain he had heard the annoyance in Martin's voice. "Jermaine," the question was in his voice. "Oh, come on, Martin. It's harmless. And he does look adorable. Besides, didn't your mum show me an album where you had your hair styled like Kid of Kid and Play?" I defended. "That was different, Jermaine." "Different tower, baby. Well, come on. The boy just braided his hair. What will people say? The same thing they said when they saw you with your kid hairstyle. That you were a child being a child. I answered.
Oh, I love it. Hey, and Renata's tier one. Isn't that a delicious reading? How did you feel hearing your words being read?
No,
so
it was absolutely amazing because I actually saw her perform it in Pretoria a few years ago. And yeah, it was brilliant. She's just,
yeah.
I was just like, if Jermaine had been a black woman, she'd have been Renate Stuma.
Tell us a little bit more about the family. That's obviously a small snippet, and we introduced that to Zuko.
She is British, married to a South African who grew up in England, who has an Irish last name, which of course causes a lot of problems when he's coming into South Africa with the immigration officials.
Yes.
How can somebody as black as you are have a name like Martin or Marley?
And I wanted to start here, and I want us to talk about London, Cape Town, Joburg. Our very good friend, I hope he's listening, otherwise we'll have to send him the podcast later, Thando Mxolozana. I think it was Thando. My apologies, it wasn't you, Thando. I was annoyed with the reviewer of his latest work. It was like, this is a coming-of-age book. Mm. And so many of the reviews around London, Cape Town, Joburg are like, this is Zukiswa's best book. Each one of our children matter to us, and they speak to a point in our own development as writers. But this book, for me, has got many themes that do connect with your earlier ones, exploring
identity,
being an outsider, partly part of a community, but not quite from there, disjointed sense of place. Tell me what for you are the important threads with this novel that spans three very different cities and two continents.
Well, you know, I think it was really about identity, and a lot of it has very much to do with myself as well, because I was born in Zambia to a Zimbabwean mom and a South African father, although all the time I was informed that I was South African, which is perhaps why all my books are set here, including my work in progress.
Hmm.
So, yes, so I think with London, Cape Town, Joburg in particular, it was my love letter to South Africa, but it was also me at my most angry, like, how have we failed in looking at certain things? And but I needed to do it, showing it through a family, you know? And Jermaine worked for me as a narrator because she is a British, so she looks at certain things, so she can critique white South Africa and black South Africa equally.
And of course, I mean, we all know the incredible sense of humor that you have and the humor that is just in all of your work. This is probably the most heart-wrenching work that you have. Was that a tonal shift that tracks your experience every time you come back to South Africa in particular? The country is not the same place as it was in 2006 when your first book came out. Was that an important thing for you to reflect? Because we'll get to your earlier work a little bit later. Everyone loves your earlier work. Some people...
more than others.
More than others. But some people also see some of your earlier work as a little bit escapist, whereas there is a kind of... And you were always committed to this anyway, which is why you didn't want to write fiction. You thought maybe you can't, because you actually take social realism very seriously. Mm. But this is probably your most heavy at a tonal level work.
Absolutely.
Is that coincidence, or is that your journey and your relationship with the country in particular?
I think it's very much my journey and my relationship with the country. The work that I'm doing, for instance, is possibly even slightly darker than London, Cape Town, Joburg, although I do try to keep a certain part of the fun, the crazy, but it's a historical novel as well, you know. So, it's I'm experimenting. I always want to experiment with something that I haven't done, you know. Mm. But of course, the common theme, I think, in all my works always seems to be identity. And it's not deliberate. It just happens.
Look, you are a pan-African, but you obviously have some Africanness in your blood. And themes around sex, sexuality, gender dynamics, questions around the middle class behavior of black people in particular, the cityscape. I mean, you can't not be traveling between Nairobi, South Africa, have in your blood heritage that includes Zimbabwean family that is there. And these are not themes that you are that are predominant in your work.
Absolutely. Absolutely, I agree.
18 minutes after 10, we're going to take a little bit of a break. And then on the other side of this break, I want to play you a clip of what some other writers think about some of Zukiswa's work. Yes. But of course, you can also, you doesn't know who it is, you can also call in, let me know what is your favorite work of hers, your favorite characters. I'm going to also ask her about some of her writing habits, techniques, and about short form writing as well. She has done just so much besides her novels, such as also what you will find in African Delights is one of her rewritings of The Suit, for example, that many of you may not have come across. It's an absolute gem. 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg. And in Cape Town, if you want to say how's it to her, give us a call on 021-446-0567. And London, Cape Town, Joburg, which everyone has been speaking about. If you have read it, what did you make of it? How did it land for you, particularly given some of Zukiswa's earlier work? 19 minutes after 10.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
22 minutes after 10, and we are in conversation with Zukiswa about everything in her literary life. If you want to call in, you can do so on 021-446-0567 and in Johannesburg, 011-883-0702. Before we actually talk about what some of the other writers had to say about Zukiswa, and Vusi, I see your call. I'll take it in a second. I just want to meditate a little bit more on London, Cape Town, Joburg. Please buy this book. Please read it. It is absolutely stunning. It is little wonder that she is an award-winning author and one of the region's best. It is also very political work, as you have said, and the characters creep up on you because Jermaine and Martin arrive, and then suddenly he has a half-sibling that enters the picture, who on other platforms you have described as what? A sort of a combination of
some of our political leaders. Can we leave it at that?
Truman Prince and a certain prominent minister who is our instant minister in the country. And one of the things that I know you enjoy, and just fill this out for me, is the incredible, I don't want to say fake because it is real, but the freedom as a fiction writer to be expressive about your political commentary in a way that perhaps you can't be if we just speak more
directly.
When
you're doing nonfiction, yes, absolutely. Because, you put it through the mouth of your word, the mouth of your characters. And, you're able to do certain things. But that's also really helped me explore certain things, certain themes that I am not sure about myself. So I will have an argument, a dialogue between characters. And sometimes it helps me get a concrete idea about things that I wasn't really sure about. Where do I stand on this? Is it a problem? You know, and because we are raised in a certain way, we are raised in such a patriarchal society, no matter how liberal we think our parents are, no matter how liberal our parents are, we're raised in a very pro-white African continent, no matter how much we think we're Pan-African. So there is a lot of stuff that you end up, okay, what do I think about this? You know?
Absolutely. Let's go to Claremont. Hello, Vusi. Good morning and welcome to the show.
Yes.
Yes, sir. What do you want to say? Go ahead.
I just want to say, you know, I've been reading Zuki's books long before she wrote books, when we were still at university, and she's always been absolutely entertaining, hysterically funny, and a great read. So it's such an honor to have known her and read all her books.
Yeah, and then that horrible question, do you have a favorite amongst them?
I would have to say, it's a tie between the Madams and, you know, I haven't read her latest one, so I can't say that, but definitely London, Cape Town, Joburg.
Stunning.
Okay, I have to say this as a disclaimer. Vusi is my best friend, and the Madams is dedicated to her. So, yeah.
Thanks, Vusi. Thanks for calling
Thanks,
in.
Thanks, Foo.
Love you,
Vix. Love you too, babe.
Much appreciated. One of the more nerdish engagements with London, Cape Town, Joburg that I came across, which was otherwise a deeply appreciative critical review of the book, was about the cover.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like the cover of the book?
I loved the cover. I love the cover. I actually told James Woodhouse, who was editor or the publisher at Quella at that time, because he sent me a couple of covers and I selected that. And I wanted to know who designed the cover. And he told me, and I said, is he married? And he said, yeah, he was married. And I said, is he open to a polyandrous affair, you know? So, yeah.
I like the cover, too. I think this cover is absolutely gorgeous. But the reason I'm asking in part is because, as you know, one of the other South African writers that you are also very generous about is actually Lauren Bucus. Mm-hmm. And she is so involved in the design of covers because mm-hmm. you and I are romantic about books as artifacts, and the covers also matter. And I like this cover. And then I came across someone who, and I have to put it in context, because this was like almost a 3,000-word review that was just making love to Zukiswa, and they struggled to find something they didn't like. But this is what they had said about the cover, this particular person. I just forget the name now. The cover makes the book look like a narration of the ancient historical background of three cities, but it's actually a beautiful narration of love, racism, family ties, betrayal, sex, sexuality, and governance. And that is absolutely, absolutely spot on, of course, which is why I really hope that people will continue to search for this particular book, because it is not cityscape, is it?
No,
it happens to be in three cities.
But perhaps that's the reason why I've seen a certain chain bookstore put it in the geographical section, the travel section. Once I was like, wow, okay, you know, yeah. And how do you do that? Do you go into the travel section and you go to the manager and you're like, yeah, this is actually a novel.
I want to play some reflections from Phumla Gqola and Reedy Klabi about what they make of some of Zukiswa's earlier work, and I will read from it and we'll discuss it. Let's play that clip if you've got it for me, Dineo.
As a professor of literature, I absolutely relish how incredibly powerful her work is to teach. And I enjoy seeing many of my students, for example, when I teach Men of the South, move. And I you can actually tangibly see how they are changed by this novel. What do I mean? Sometimes they change their politics on sexuality significantly. Sometimes you can see the growth. And even those that come in with kind of, I don't know, interesting queer and feminist politics already, you can see how reading the text and thinking about the text and talking about the text challenges them and pushes them to do really heavy intellectual work, but also to do really important emotional work. So I've taught different texts by her at different times. Currently I'm teaching, this year, I've taught Men of the South, and I taught it last semester to a second-year class on writing gender in African literature. And so it was one of the set texts for that course. And I taught various things. So it allowed us to talk about, it's a contemporary, I mean, it's based in contemporary South Africa. It allowed us to talk about heterosexuality around, it allowed us to talk about queer desire. It allowed us to think about, to complicate how we think about the relationships between different forms of sexuality, but also how to think about imagining heterosexual romance that isn't patriarchal. So it was very serious, but it was also very fun, right? Because people, you know, it's a novel that allows you to do a lot of kind of experimental thinking. I've also used her two first novels, The Madams and Behind Every Successful Man, in a previous postgrad course to talk about where we were looking at constructions of femininities and urban cultures in urban Africa. So thinking about kind of shifting presences of kind of women, black women, African women in different Africans. So I taught it alongside texts that are kind of popular fiction that focuses on urban women's lives in different African cities.
I think my favorite was Men of the South, and there were such charming characters. He'd taken a very simple way of life to unravel some very profound truths, and I think that is the magic of fiction.
Okay, so we're going to reflect. You cannot have Zukus on and not talk about the Madams and about Men of the South. Those are obviously absolute literary classics. And if you've read them, how much did you enjoy them? Which was your favorite characters? Who annoyed you? And which one spoke to you? 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567.
Eusebius is on Twitter at Eusebius.
26 minutes before 11, we are in conversation with Zukiswa about her life's work. She already has life's work, even though she's still quite young. Let's talk about the Madams. Why does everyone who interview you about the Madams immediately say, oh, you're talking about like black middle class life? Because I love the Madams, but I think that there are universal themes that speak to a sort of cross class set of realities about our country in the book. But you seem to roll with their description that you unashamedly then say, yes, I'm coming out of the closet. I do particularly have a fascination with black middle class life in the suburbs.
Well, no, I do particularly have a fascination with possibly getting a white domestic worker. But anyway, before we go there, can I just say thank you? That was such a generous talk from Pumla. And oh my God, I think her leaving Wits is going to be a serious loss for Joburg, but UFH is very lucky.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Yeah, I just needed to put that out.
Yeah, when I hear her speak about your work, I think, oh gosh, why wasn't she teaching me in first year? Maybe I would have majored in English literature.
No, I'm like, well, you know, I always sound much more intelligent than I feel like when she's talking about my work. I'm like, I need to take notes so that I can claim when I'm on radio that this is what I was saying,
yes.
You know? Anyway, so the Madams, yeah. You know, it was part of the reason why I generally say gloss over and say, yeah, it's a cross-section of middle-class life, because sometimes it's really quite difficult to explain your work, isn't it? And you know, it does go into the middle class, but there is a lot of show also of poor black lives and so forth and so on, and race and sexuality, you know, particularly with Marita and her girlfriend, and so yeah, there is that. And you know, I think sometimes it's a book that I wrote almost 11 years ago, you know, and so sometimes when it's brought up, I actually have to go and revisit it. And like now, sometimes it's not available for me to revisit, and so I'm like, okay, who was that? But there are some characters who stick with me, so I will remember.
Well, they all do, because they're all powerful, interesting characters, whether you're talking about, you know, the white domestic worker, whether you're talking about Tandi's trials and you know, tribulations. And what for me is one of the beautiful things about the Madams is that we think that certain kinds of struggles are poor struggles. And maybe that's
absolutely
one good thing about the fact that these are middle-class characters in a sense. So, for example, cheating, men who are on the down low. That happens both in the township and it happens in the burbs. And there are many women who, I think, and far be it from me to mansplain women to Zukiswa, but there are many professional women who don't speak out about what happens inside their relationship, inside their marriages. And we see this, that even the character that is the one that is normally the shoulder to cry on for the neighbor, then it turns out that she's harboring her own secrets about her own
exactly.
relationship.
Exactly, and she can't talk about it because she has to look like she's the good wife. Everything is working perfectly for her. And, I mean, we've seen it in a lot of cases of femicide where a woman is killed and then everybody gets surprised. Oh, they looked like they were so happy. They're posting happy pictures, like now on particularly with Facebook, on social media, on Instagram. And then, yeah, I mean, we saw what happened with our former certain on Instagram, you know?
Yeah.
that affair that played out on Instagram, you see? So we see that all the time. And then the whole work, and it's almost the wife has to always work, to qinisela, to show, you know, she's strong, you know, she's a, you know, because obviously if the husband is having an affair or anything is happening, maybe she's not doing something right. Maybe she's failed.
How much of the madams was partly to reflect the status quo, and how much of it was a yearning for women to strike back against patriarchy? Because although I found the plot convincing, some of the plot for me was also like, really? I wish many more women who have these horrible men in their lives can get on a plane, fly out to Vic Falls and, you know, shag for the weekend, come back and you have your own skeletons. Are those realities that happened with you and your girlfriends?
Do you know, Eusebius, I always get this, hey? You know, the most far out stuff that happens in my novels is actually what's true. Every time. People are like, oh, does this, you know, and the thing that they believe, that's usually, that's my
improbable
creation, just, yeah. But the most far out things are usually what I can tell you stories, man.
So we go from that, and I want to, and you would have heard the Pumla talking about the incredible journey that her students go through, particularly when they deal with men of the South. Now, I think it was inevitable that you and I would become friends. You're obviously the most famous fag hag on the continent. You love exploring sexuality and sexual orientation. And people who live in the shadows because of heterosexuality and just patriarchy, just talk to me about the genesis behind some of these incredible themes. And we can both see why our wonderful Professor Kola would love to use this as a teaching tool with undergrads and just shake them out of their
out
own
of
normativity.
Their stupor, I know, right? No, you know, it's the thing is, I know the stories. I know everything that's happening. But there is also, I mean, that's why I did a play on it in Men of the South, I think, in Zilikazi, where he says, resurrect him and I can out-shaka Shaka Zulu, you know? because it's like, oh, yeah, no. Homosexuality is a Western concept, da-da-da-da. And then there are all these stories in history and stuff. I mean, a lot of people don't know this. One of the countries with the most homophobic laws right now is Uganda, and yet the Ugandan martyrs exist because they refuse to have a liaison with a king. You know, so there are these things that we don't talk about. We have refused. Obviously, the religious right has also come in, and yes, this is. And they've put a lot of money in this thing, and a lot of people agree to take the money and then espouse the most hateful, horrible things.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. I can't keep up with my Twitter timeline with all the love for Zukiswa's output, but here's one typical one. Asisi Pokuga says, my favorite Zukiswa character is Mzilikazi from Men of the South. I'm looking for a man close to Mzi. I have a huge crush on Mzi. I think one of the most important sentences in that clip from Reedy and from Pumla is when Pumla makes the observation, which I think is very important so people don't stereotype you as exploring only the overtly marginalized sexualities, like, for example, you know, men who might be gay or on the down low have complicated lives. When she says that it's also very important for you as Zukiswa to write about heterosexual sex and heterosexuality in a way that is non-patriarchal.
Absolutely. It is very important for me because I think too often, you know, I mean, and that is another thing that I did explore in Men of the South, I think, I hope successfully. One of the things that I did with that is I was always curious, you know, what is manhood? You know, And there's always this thing where anytime violence against women happens, anything happens, it's like, this one is not a man, or he's not working, this one is not a man. What is manhood,
yeah,
you know? is it one thing?
Absolutely.
So it's questions I had and questions I still have, and I hope everybody keeps asking and exploring.
Okay, before we leave your early work and talk about a couple of other themes on the other side of this break, we have to talk about one of your works that often domestic workers like to read in particular. Made in SA, 30 Ways to Leave Your Madam by Zuki Swawana. And this is a very deceptive book because if you are not particularly skilled as a reader, you will enjoy it, which is okay. You can read books at many different levels, but it's actually a deeply political book, even though it is hilarious, right? And I'm just going to randomly open it up because that's what you do with Zuko's work and it's still funny. White madams on page 45. There are two types of white madams, the poor white madam and the liberal middle-class white madam. Are the phones ringing off the hook yet? There's also the rich white madam, but as you already know, the rich come in a different class, and among the rich, there's no race, as the only colour they know is the colour of the rondellas. There is, however, one distinct quality of most white madams, be they rich, middle class or poor. They do not have a day job, at least not in the normal 9 to 5 that other working madams may. I mean, it's just... I love it. And she talks about the Indian madams, the conservative Indian madam, and so it goes on. It's not a self-help book. This is actually a deeply serious political work, even though it's hilarious.
It's very satirical, but I actually did a whole lot of research on it, and I interviewed domestic workers, and I also interviewed madams. And what was interesting about it is, as you see from the book, is the madam section is very small, and that's because the madams never know their domestic workers as much as the domestic workers know their madams. Yes. And perhaps one of the most flattering things that was ever I was ever told about that book was our mutual friend Angela McCullough's domestic worker came to me and said, "Hey, Sissy." And I said, "Yes." And she said, Yozuki-sa. And I said, "Yes." And she said, "You know, everybody, I think every madam must read this book, you know?" And I was like, "Yay!"
Love it, love it. And don't worry, she's an equal opportunity satirist because she writes about all the madams. The nouveau riche madam was just hilarious. When you think Kebbles, Krauses, Kenny, and Pisanes, you think flashy. This is the epitome of our nouveau riche. They are consumed with image and showing that they have arrived. You will find this madam and her hubby or partner, or down low brother.
Yes.
To wear the terminology, in Melrose Arch, Sandton, or because of proximity to power, often Forest Town or Greater Houghton. They have no problem swiping their credit card at a Sandton boutique so they can buy a watch for 200,000 rand or throwing an all-white party that costs millions. I mean, it's absolutely delicious. And it is partly goes back to when Lewis nudged you to take your own writing seriously. We have this artificial thing, and here's where we part ways with our professor friend, Gola. In the academy, it's useful to carve up the world into categories. But you and I know that the distinction between fiction and non-fiction, the political and the non-political, is just absolute rubbish.
Absolutely.
Let's go to Omonde. Nileka, hello.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the show.
How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Ziki?
I'm very well, Ndileka. How are you?
I'm very well. I just want to say I love all your books. I just unboxed you, like, recently. I am so obsessed. And there's a couple of books that you still can't find. And there's this other one that makes me very, very angry, Refilwe. It was so. It had, like, small pages, and I really wanted to read further. Can you just write a part two on that one?
Angelica, that's a children's book, though.
I know.
She's a children.
It's for children.
So please write part two.
But what else can't you find?
Oh, The Madams.
The Madams, you can get madams. It from African Flavor Books, and you know what's exciting?
And those people don't answer those phones, eh? I always send them emails. They don't answer their calls. I really, really do love your books. And I want you to keep up all the good work and be inspired. Travel a lot, be inspired, and talk to a lot of people so you keep on writing.
Oh, bless you. Thank you very much, Ndileka.
Thank you.
And, you know, African Flavor Books is going to be opening, I understand, in Bram.
Yes.
In about a month. So you might not have to call them. You just might need to just walk into the bookstore and say, listen, you guys don't answer your phone. So now...
Absolutely. Mwangi says on Twitter, listening to this brilliant writer and regretting that despite a number of mutual acquaintances, our paths have never crossed. But I hope that you've read everything that she's written, Mwangi. I need to apologize, shame, to my domestic worker. Because I thought maybe she's the one who took the madams. And here's Bay tweeting, still haven't got my copy of the madams back from my mother and sister. So that's where my copy of the madams is, in Soweto, Noho, 12 minutes before 11.
Eusebius McKaiser on your number one news and talk station.
It's best to have obituaries when you're still alive.
I know, right?
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Okay, so you want to behave like Oprah?
Yes. Anyway, so okay, so I'm having this dinner. So Mafco Trust is decided that they're going to be very nice to me, and they're going to have me host this dinner. And I would like to have it with four different artists. I'd like a visual artist. I'd like a writer. I would like to have a filmmaker. And I would like to have a musician. And yes, we'll pay for the drinks and dinner. If you would be so kind as to get in touch. It's tomorrow night at Doppio.
So how are we going to decide this one?
I think we might have to...
What, fastest fingers first?
Fastest fingers first, you know?
There was a constraint because I thought that maybe I can sneak in as the writer. But I know you'd like to be surrounded by people who are sadly younger than me.
yes, 18 to 35 because yes. Somafco Trust, Solomon Matlangu Freedom College is the one that's sponsoring.
Okay, so if you are a writer, a musician, a filmmaker, or a visual artist and you want to hang out with Zukiswa, it is a stunning opportunity. I tell you, she is the most generous friend that I have when it comes to us as writers, and I think all our other writer friends will agree. You can do so. Why don't you just SMS me if you want to. Megan and Mahal will monitor 31702, 31567, or just tag me on Twitter at Eusebius or at 702 or at Cape Talk. And and then I will put you in touch with Zukiswa. Now, again, one of your other works that is absolutely hilarious and at the same time political, and it's wonderful to be able to get both in one go, is, of course, Behind Every Successful Man.
I'm going to tell you a story.
Lies an over-ambitious woman.
Woman, exactly. I'm going to tell you a story about that book. So I met this woman. I was going to donate blood at Southdale shopping center, and I met this woman, and I was wearing a t-shirt and sweatpants, and this woman said to me, excuse me, and I said yes, and she was looking really lovely. She had high heels and everything, and she said, you could be a doppelganger for my favorite writer. And I was like, oh really? And I did that smile that all of us who are artists, writers, musicians, filmmakers have practiced in front of the mirror when we think we're going to win a major award, right? So I did this smile and I said, so who is your favorite writer? And she said, Zukiswa Vanna. And I said, I am Zukiswa Vanna. And she looked at me from top to bottom to top to bottom and she said, but you're so ordinary. And she walked away in a huff. You know, so yes, you know, sometimes the problem with writing fiction is that people assume that you're like your characters.
That's
you know?
True. That's very true. Okay, let's play some rapid fire here. We've got 3 minutes to go. Favorite spot in Joburg?
Favorite spot? Doppio, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
When do you write at your best?
2 to 6 in the morning.
Okay, so you're an after dark creature, after nine.
Yeah.
No wonder you're so many of your characters are shadowy.
After nine.
Favorite country on the continent? I know it's a horrible question. She's living currently in Kenya.
I know. Yeah. If if I say it, am I going to get a blesser who'll take me there on holiday? Because then I'd say Seychelles.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. You were forced to read at an early age, resented it, but you recognized the importance, not quite resented it, but you know, you weren't getting as many Barbie dolls as other family members, yes. But you recognize what it has done to you. I know who some of the writers were that you read as a kid. You were reading widely, including some adult stuff. Tell us some of the writers that had a major impression on you when you started out reading.
Shema Chinojo's Harvest of Thorns was a particularly interesting text because it was also very political, but he made fun of it. You know, he made it light. It was amazing. Tsitsidanga Rembwa, Ama Taidu. George Orwell.
Aldous Huxley,
yes. And I've always put 1984 with Huxley's book, A Brave New World. Yeah. I always think that those two should be read together.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's because even though a lot of your stuff is social realism, your love of reading spans genres.
Absolutely.
You can read everyone
anything
from
and everything.
Mackayser's earnest racism stuff to Lauren Bucus.
Absolutely. And right now I'm reading some essays from a Florida writer.
Mm. Which form of writing do you find the hardest? Short stories, essays, or long form?
Short stories. I write one good short story every 2 or 3 years. So if you expect a collection from me, expect it when I'm like 60 or 70.
So interesting you say that. Nick has said the same before. People think that because there are literally fewer words, that it's easier. But the economy also means that you have less room for waffling. You've got to get on with it.
Absolutely.
And then last but not least, two questions. Where can we get hold of your books? Because many people now want to know, where can they buy it? And then are you going to tell the Eusebius Mackayser show what it is that we can expect coming out next?
Okay. Right. Okay. You can get them, as I mentioned, African Flavor Books, Bridge Books as well in downtown Joburg. I know it's changed names. It used to be Commissioner Street.
Mm.
What's it called now?
I don't know. It's
yes.
A good question.
I think Chain Bookstore, there are some copies in some of them, maybe Rosebank. So
Hyde Park exclusives.
Hyde Park, yes.
I've seen them. I was there the other day. You know,
fantastic.
I'm always looking out for your books.
So there you are. I'm not quite sure which ones because I've seen like in a lot of them they don't have. So Hyde Park, I guess, has some. Right. And what can you expect next from me? I have a nonfiction travel writer memoir type thing coming up next year, all being well. I did Nairobi to Joburg by public transport, and
then
I flew and did a road trip from Copenhagen to Lviv in Ukraine. So I have, you know, highlighted the life of a writer, and I'm also doing a historical novel, like I mentioned, that hopefully will be out 2019-2020.
So Kisok, congratulations on your incredible output, being a very generous writer, reading other writers. We often don't read each other, and always proselytizing about your friend's work. I mean, Zukiswa is that one writer, despite being larger than life, who will fly to just be there for a new writer and give them support. Your generosity is matched only by the brilliance of your output. Thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you very much, Eusebius, although you called me big.
Hi, man.